Radio Parallax notes that in its 16-year history, we have never, never collected your data and sold it to third parties. Yay. We do note that, like the hippie founders of what has become the current tech behemoth of Silicon Valley, we'd like to think that we're making the world a better place. And while part of us certainly hopes you would at some point become, in a way, addicted to this program, but we try to addict you by just being plain interesting, not by using psychological tricks. And I have to laugh when I say that as I think of a long-forgotten skit that was once on Saturday Night Live, which referred to a stage hypnotist's show. When a paying patron was asked for a review, he said, "It was great, better than Cats. I'm going back to see it again and again." And as further proof, they cited the review by Rex Reed in the New York Post, wherein he said, "It was great, better than Cats. I'm going back to see it again and again." Anyway, Radio Parallax, at least as good as Cats, and we hope you come back to hear it again and again. We'll see you soon.
This is listener-supported 90.1 FM KZFR Community Radio, streaming worldwide at KZFR.org. Stay tuned for The Doctor's In.
I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, "Son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right." I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, "You got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight." I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, "Boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now." I went to the doctor. Doctor said, "Friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse." Oh, I went to the doctor. Oh, I went to the doctor. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said,
"Sir." Hello, this is Ken Logan and The Doctor's In. The Doctor's In is a show that we do once a month, the third Thursday of the month from 6 to 7. I like to cover subjects of interest to you, the listener, from a health standpoint, a medical standpoint, and I thank you for listening. If you had a subject that you wanted me to cover, you could email me at klogan.md@yahoo.com. I want you to know that the voices that you hear on this program today are the opinions of we, the speakers today, and not the opinions of staff, board of directors, underwriters, or anybody else. Speaking of underwriters, The Doctor's In is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Deborah Lucero and Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events, including Artoberfest, the True North Tour, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by Cartridge World in Chico. Cartridge World provides a cost-effective, environmentally friendly alternative to purchasing new printer consumables, specializing in the refilling of laser and inkjet cartridges and related products at 760 Mangrove in the Safeway Plaza. More information can be obtained by calling 342-3333. So today, the subjects that we're going to cover include, a little later in the show, or soon in the show, we're going to be talking with Chris Nelson, a registered nurse and women's health nurse practitioner, about the potential health consequences, both medical and mental, relative to people not having a place of their own to live. In other words, homelessness. Before that, we're going to be discussing some behavioral health subjects or issues. We have with us Ken Fleming, a behavioral health specialist here in our community for quite some time, I believe. He's a past grand jury chairman as well. He's going to talk about a grand jury report and how that relates to behavioral health in our community and how it may relate to who actually sits on our county board of supervisors as well. Ken Fleming, welcome.
Well, thank you. My pleasure to be here.
Talk to us.
Well, I'm here tonight to help people understand just how important the Board of Supervisors is to the emotional and physical health of the people living in this county. Most folks that I run into, even my friends that are pretty politically aware, often do not really understand what it is that the Board of Supervisors does. And certainly they don't understand and are usually surprised to find out that they oversee a budget of over $500 million. Mm-hmm. This year, $550 million. And furthermore, of that budget, over half of it is in Health and Human Services. Mm-hmm. Three departments make up about 51-52% of the total budget, and it's been that way for a very long time. Now, the first question that might pop into someone's mind when they hear that is, wow, with all that money, how come we have so many people on the streets who are clearly in need of behavioral health services? How is it that, you know, firemen are finding rats in restaurants when they come to investigate smoke alarms? And I think, really, what I hope I leave with tonight is folks understanding that the ultimate responsibility is with the Board of Supervisors in any county. 5 years ago, I was privileged to sit on the county grand jury, and we looked at two areas that I think are of interest tonight. One was behavioral health, and I should say we were the third grand jury in a four-year period to investigate and issue a report on behavioral health. Behavioral health has had a difficult time, really, for the last decade, at least in this county. Mm-hmm. The other area, which all grand juries are required by law to do, is to look at the jail. And let me just start with that. Mm-hmm. The bottom line for us was that there were nearly 700 people incarcerated at that time. We're in the process of expanding the jail, or as Sheriff Honig says, we're turning the jail into a prison with the expansion.
Can I ask you a quick question? 700, tell me what you mean by that. 700 over what time frame, or at one time, or what are you talking about?
At one time.
You're
basically
kidding me.
Our capacity was 700. We're going to take it, I think they're going to take it up to... Well, at that time, they had a needs assessment that came from somewhere that said they needed 900 to 1,000 beds.
I had no idea it was that big.
I don't think anyone else does either. You know, part of the issue, and it's kind of an aside, but perhaps not, is that back then, and the sheriff's office, the county was basically acting as a landlord, if you will, for other counties. At least one full pod was under contract to the federal government.
Pod of prisoners, a group of prisoners.
Yes, yeah. Uh-huh. And I can't remember. I'm going to say that's about 80 beds, but uh-huh. I may be wrong about mm-hmm. that. And they were making $2 million a year doing it. So there was an incentive to do it. Some would say, gee, that's good business.
Paid by other counties or jurisdictions?
Well, in that case, it actually was the federal government paying the bill.
Uh-huh.
You say, well, what's the problem with that? Well, the problem with that is that we have a lot of data and a long history, knowing that when a prison goes in, when you have large numbers of people coming from outside of the area to be incarcerated, particularly in rural areas, you have major impacts. You have impacts upon social services, public health, behavioral health, et cetera, because, of course, these families... these folks have families, and they often move to the area. I've often thought that one of the many problems that the beautiful city of Oroville has is a result of this very situation. Hmm. But let me just get back to looking at that, at the numbers there. Approximately a third of everyone that was incarcerated was known to have a behavioral health problem of some sort, mental health, alcohol, or drug abuse problem.
Say that one more time for the listeners, please.
One third. I suspect it's higher now.
Mm-hmm.
They had a limited medical capability there. But now they're looking at putting, I think, 36-bed hospital within the new county prison, if you will. My concern about that, and these are for both medical and psychiatric issues, my problem with that is that experience shows that it won't be long before virtually all those beds will be filled with people with severe psychiatric issues. And it's not like you can mix those two clients, people with medical issues and psychiatric issues, very well. And what do we know about that? Well, we know that the three largest psychiatric hospitals in the United States of America are in jails.
Hmm.
And we also know that, well, the largest is in LA. LA County Jail has 1,000 beds, psychiatric beds. They're always full. The last report I looked at, evaluation, said that they needed at least 20% more beds just to meet the current need. My golly, they were spending $10 million a year simply on psychotropic drugs.
Mm.
And the outcome is that people tend to get sicker that have gone and stayed in the psychiatric prisons, if you will. So I think that there's a real concern.
Their psychiatric conditions worsen instead of improve?
Well,
I'm thinking about treatment should be the improvement thereof, of their psychiatric conditions.
Yes, absolutely. And I think what they're pointing to is mm-hmm. Remission of symptoms take longer within that environment, which is not hard to imagine.
It sure makes sense, doesn't it?
And secondly, mm-hmm. The relapses when they get out mm-hmm. are rates are very, very high.
Mm-hmm.
So with the homeless, having heard what you're going to be talking with Chris about in a while,
mm-hmm.
We can be assured that many of those homeless people are there. In fact, I saw two of my favorite homeless men when I was when the grand jury was touring the jail. I hadn't mm-hmm. seen them on the streets for a while, and I mm-hmm. figured that they probably were were, you know, back in jail.
Mm-hmm.
But who is responsible for making these decisions? Well, the sheriff, but the sheriff can't do it by himself. Ultimately, the Board of Supervisors makes the decisions about the jail, whether it's going to be a jail or a prison, whether it's going to have psychiatric beds in it or not. And I dare say I would be very surprised if any of your listeners were even aware that this was going on. One of the recommendations of the grand jury 5 years ago was that there had not been a comprehensive behavioral health plan developed for years. And we were told at that time that they were in the process of one, of doing one, and it would be about available in months. It took them another year or two to get it done. And I just looked at it last week, and it's really not a plan. It's kind of a list of services, and it certainly would not guide decision making. And again, you know, we're talking about a behavioral health budget that back 5 years ago was $52 million, and now is, for this year, I think is $68 million. And when we look at public health, we see kind of the same things. You know, a lot of positions that are budgeted for that never get filled. So budget surpluses, meaning at the end, they budget for a year, and at the end of the year, they have a surplus. Now, somebody may think that that's, you know, good management, but what it really means is you're just not able to get your job done. It puts tremendous pressure on staff because they're going to have the same number of women coming in to the kinds of services that Chris provides. And certainly behavioral health is going to have the same number of people coming in no matter what.
And I, you know, just as a healthcare provider in the community, I think we as physicians and nurse practitioners, et cetera, are aware that there's been funding issues in the Butte County behavioral health over the last several years, decreasing the availability of availability of care, essentially.
Well, that's what we're told.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got to tell you that I'm not so sure.
Hmm.
I mean, do we have enough money to meet the absolute need? I'm sure we do not. Do we have enough money to do a much, much better job than we're doing now? I think so. The grand jury thought so 5 years ago, and I think that's even more true now.
I think that's a big point to be made, especially made by the grand jury, who have studied that subject.
Well, I would think so, and, you know, the Board of Supervisors, you know, is alleged to have read that report, and they certainly made a motion to respond to the areas that we required them to respond to. But I doubt, you know, that any of them paid much attention to it, quite frankly.
And it's important, therefore, to have board members, county board of supervisor members who have their eyes open and are willing to discuss and think about these issues here in the county.
Absolutely. Mm. And, you know, I'll make no bones about it. For the first time in all the years I've lived here since 78, we've never really had anyone run for the Board of Supervisors that I felt had any particular interest. We did have a woman 20 years ago who had an interest in children's services, and that was very helpful. But as she retired, the whole thing, you know, our children's services are really scant, and yet the need is great. And I see that the county is going to have a new effort to work with folks like yourself and Chris, providers in the community, to recognize children and adolescents with behavioral health needs. Now, you know, it's hard to argue that that's a bad idea on its face, but I'm here to tell you that it's probably not a great idea. Only because the last time I looked, we didn't have anywhere near the resources that could handle what was walking in on a day-to-day basis, much less a flood of new referrals.
Yeah, at the county behavioral health.
At some point, you have to have a plan, and you have to understand what the numbers are, or you make these kinds of decisions.
Wow. So, I don't know if it's appropriate for me to bring up the fact that there is an election coming up. Is there anybody? I'm just going to say it. Is there anybody running for board of supervisors that you think would be more socially conscious?
Well, you know, we're lucky. In Chico, it's the two Chico districts. There are five supervisorial districts. Both of the Chico districts are up, and we have two women running, one in each district, and I think both of them have, one has professional experience that will help guide her, and the other has had a long history of working with the kinds of agencies and bringing people to together to solve these kinds of problems. So, you know, let me just say that anyone who, everyone needs to take a look at Tammy Ritter and Deborah Lucero. Go out to their websites and make up your mind. I think these are two women that could really help turn this situation around.
Say their names again, please.
Tammy Ritter and Deborah Lucero.
Great. Good to hear their names. Well, Ken Fleming, I appreciate your insight in this behavioral health situation here in the county. And I appreciate your opinion. You know, you as a behavioral health specialist and past chairman on the grand jury and the report you put out and to the Board of Supervisors and your opinion, that means a lot. And I appreciate your opinion today. Thank you.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
And thank you for speaking to the potential for electing two county supervisors with, I say this way, with a social consciousness. And we all know that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of the Board of Supervisors, Board of Directors of KZFR, the underwriters, or anybody else. They're your opinions, my opinions. Thank you. Now, Chris Nelson, hello!
Hi. Hi, Dr. Ken.
And yeah. I'm just going to reintroduce you, if that's all right with you.
Okay.
Chris Nelson, registered nurse and nurse practitioner. She is a women's health nurse practitioner. And I will say, I was thinking about driving over here today, how to introduce you. And I want to say you are one of the, and Ken Fleming too, you're one of the rocks of Gibraltar of this community in healthcare providers and in community members with a social conscience, you know, for thinking of the care of the people of this community, both medically and socially, and the responsibilities that we all have as community members. And I just have a lot of respect for you. Chris Nelson, hello.
Hello, and thank you for your work at the Shalom Free Clinic. I hope that everyone is aware of that, and I'd like you to give a little blurb on what Shalom Free Clinic is as we start to talk about homeless in the community.
Oh, yeah. All right. Want me to do that now?
Sure. I'm going to interview
There is such a thing as a free clinic here in Chico, and that is the Shalom Free Clinic. It's on Sunday afternoons, 1 to 4, or sometimes a little later than that, in the afternoon, every Sunday, on Mangrove, 1010 Mangrove, Suite D. No appointment necessary. No charge on the care. We have a doctor and usually a nurse practitioner or sometimes two doctors. We have also a behavioral health component to that where we have Dr. Kimura, a psychiatrist,
currently working at the Shalom Free Clinic two of the Sundays per month. And then we have an array of social workers relative to counseling available. And again, no charge. The behavioral health element is not at Tintin Mangrove. It's at the First Christian Church, but nonetheless, we are one unit. We are the Shalom Free Clinic each Sunday. Again, no appointment necessary for the medical. Behavioral health, we usually like appointments, but we can do some walk-ins. Look us up if you need us.
Yeah, and thank you. And sometimes your clients can get referrals for dental care, medication.
Dental care lately has been a little difficult relative to availability, but medication help, yes. Referrals, we have a little, we counsel about referrals. We counsel about it in health insurance and getting primary care and other health care in the community. We do a lot of helping people work work their way into the healthcare community, mm-hmm. depending on their needs. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's a lot of what we do, actually.
Yeah, continuity of care is so important.
Oh, yeah.
This is part of what is so fragmented in when homeless people seek services.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So I'll just launch on that. I've been a volunteer with Safe Space for the last few years, and I'm speaking more as a volunteer.
Tell us real quick what Safe Space is again, please,
okay, so
to the listeners.
That is a winter shelter that is held usually sometime in November to sometime in February. And so every night, whatever the churches say, so a lot, it's usually between 50 and 60 people a night come to an intake place, and then volunteers help them to sign up to go to different churches. And we have mats and cots that are laid down in usually the auditorium of this church space. And people get a wonderful meal cooked by people in the community. There's usually entertainment. A lot of people are conked out by 7 o'clock at night.
Wow.
And but they stay until it's time for breakfast at the Jesus Center, and then we provide transportation back to the Jesus Center.
Wow.
And we have a number of volunteer slots that have to be filled, and I usually do the night shift because that's mm-hmm. one of the hardest ones to fill. So I just think of them as angels, the homeless people. I have a totally different take on homeless people than other people do because I watch them as they dream and, you know, sleep. So
fellow human beings they are, fellow
yes.
community members they are.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And you all who volunteer, this is all an all-volunteer, the Safe Space is an all-volunteer project here in Chico, California.
Mm-hmm.
And so a number of the churches volunteer their one church per week or two
right.
weeks at a slot,
mm-hmm.
and for putting up for sleep mm-hmm. people who do not have homes here in the
mm-hmm.
community. Wow, and volunteers could get involved. Well, of course, it's stopped for this season.
Right.
But how could somebody, who would somebody connect with if a volunteer was looking for next year?
I think that there will be some changes this year because the Chico Housing Action Team has gotten very involved in housing.
Correct.
They are housing probably 70 or 80 people right
now.
They've got about 19 different houses they're managing. I mean, they are really, really working on
expanding housing
as a solution to all of
this.
Say
that organization again.
Chico Housing Action Team. And but in the past, it's always been that you signed up for Safe Space by going to chicohousingactionteam.org.
Uh-huh.
And if that's changed, there'll be a pretty widespread information about it later. But
so Chico Housing Action Team or CHAT.
CHAT.
Uh-huh, great, excellent.
Yeah, and so...
All right.
Supporting them, I think, is really critical because they are just people in the community who are taking this on and doing their ultimate best. The tiny house village concept has gained a lot of traction, and if the city council declares a shelter emergency, there's some really good hope that we can get that tiny house village up and started as a model for the Housing First.
Excellent.
And we are really in a dangerous place right now because we have a lot of kind of vigilantism, this group really I would say like a hate group against homeless people has been formed in Chico, and it's gotten really ugly. So it's very important that people continue to have the I-thou concept of who the homeless are. They're just like us.
They're
in a different body, and they're having a different life and a different experience, but they are human. And they
Fellow community members.
Yeah, they it's, you know, they a lot of times it's we're just one paycheck away from what they're experiencing. But I talked to three different individuals today who with a lot of information on who the local homeless people are. So is it okay to just talk about some of that?
Yes.
So first I talked to Joy, who's the director at the homeless center, I mean, the Torrey shelter. And her first thing out of her mouth was about dental care and about how so many people have dental abscesses, and they are, you know, they're at risk for heart disease and all kinds of health problems when they have this really terrible bacterial infections in their gums, and you know, when you lose your teeth, you can't chew, and so there's just a bunch of problems. And for some reason, that just seemed really big for her. But she talked
about dental health.
Is a big deal. That's why I asked you about Shalom.
Yeah, and let me just say real quick. In a minute, I want you to bounce back. Just a real brief thing for the listeners on what Torrey Shelter is. But relative to the dental, when we talked about that a minute ago, I said, well, there isn't, it's very difficult to get free dental care. That's the bottom line. Free dental care in our community is very difficult to do, to obtain currently. But dental infections, different story, you know.
It's medical.
It's medical, exactly. Mm-hmm. So going to their primary care physician or mid-level practitioner, like a nurse practitioner, or to the Shalom Clinic, yes. If they indeed have an infection, they should be on an antibiotic until that infection's treated. Hey, I tell you what, we're going to take a break in a minute, but before we take the break, can you tell us, tell the listeners, just real quick, for those who don't know, what the Torrey Shelter is?
Okay. Well, I'm not an expert on the Torrey Shelter, but it is across the street from the Costco, and they are a shelter that's been there for many years. They've served the homeless. They are currently just about capacity. They serve families and have a lot of services, and they're very, very important in terms of just helping as many people as they can. They do have barriers that, like, Safe Space didn't have, but they're starting to unlock some of the barriers and trying to make it more inclusive. And
these are for
a great program.
And these are for people who do not have a home and need a place to sleep.
Yeah.
That night, and a meal, a couple meals.
Well, yeah.
Dinner and breakfast.
But then they're out in the morning again onto the street.
Yeah.
So
it's a night only thing.
Right. And they can't take people with serious health conditions. Like one of the things we talked about was somebody's meds for diarrhea gets stolen. So then if they can't take care of themselves, then they can't stay there.
Yeah.
You know, they have many, many different conditions.
Yeah.
They can't stay there.
Including drug and alcohol, is that correct?
Well, they're trying to work it in somehow. But
that's
you know, if you have a dog, you can't stay there. And many homeless people rely on their service animals, for their emotional support.
Sure.
They have limitations.
Gotcha. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back with Chris Nelson some more. Hang on. Thank you.
Soundtrack was by Ken Clark, is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. So here we are back with the Dr. Zen, and I'm Dr. Ken Logan, and sitting here today with Chris Nelson, registered nurse, and a nurse practitioner. She's a women's health nurse practitioner, and she's been and will continue discussing with us some of the health consequences when people do not have a home.
Yeah, and there's different levels of things. Sometimes there's illnesses that preceded homelessness or sometimes created the homelessness in the first place.
Ooh, that's a good point.
And then there's some that are consequences of the homelessness, and then there's the homelessness itself complicating the disease progression. So there's different layers of this, but
gotcha.
I spoke to a nurse practitioner who works for Enlo, and she said she wanted to bring up the issues about that there's no transportation to pick up medications. Patients are unable to soak wounds in clean, yeah, warm water. There's lack of primary care for routine medication refills. There's lost or stolen antibiotics or other medications. People are released from the emergency room with no place to go with the, you know, with the follow-up care that they have, like things like alcoholism, no place to sober up. And she even mentioned, that's why I'm not saying her name, is that there is also a bias within the system in the clinics and among healthcare workers for the homeless against them. I mean, sort of not recognizing, you know, them for their. I assume if you're having to take on somebody that's disorderly because of mental illness or alcoholism or drug abuse, that maybe you wouldn't feel so wonderful too. So I'm not saying it's always like this horrible personality flaw in the healthcare workers, but I think they get a little jaded after a while, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah. You know, let me something you said made me think about something that I was thinking about on my way over here, and thinking about health maintenance. You know, that all of us, all of we humans, if we're at all health conscious,
mm-hmm,
some of the, you know, us maintaining our health is something that we do, we participate in to one degree or another, such as simple things, such as, I'm going to start with something very simple, such as having a bed in your own home to relax in and get a good night's sleep in.
And a bathroom.
And then the bathroom, the sink to wash your hands in.
Mm-hmm.
And I what it brought to my head was when you talked about the wounds. I mean, there are a lot of wounds, mm-hmm, for people who live on the street.
Right.
And how I know me, mm-hmm, when I get wounds on myself from working around my place. There's a lot. There's in order to keep them from getting infected, it requires repetitive, regular care, and part of that is washing it and caring for it in ways to prevent infection.
Mm-hmm.
If I was homeless, that wouldn't occur.
Right, and same with other skin disorders, things like fungal problems in their,
yeah,
feet. These people, their feet are always wet. The shoes that they're wearing don't fit them because they're hand-me-downs. They're either too big or too small, you know. They're constantly wet, and so they have these horrible fungal infections on their feet.
They go on to bacterial infections.
Yeah.
Foot care is another,
right,
horrible consequence of
right,
being homeless. I'm just going to... What part of what made me think about this, simple things that we who have a home take for granted, such as a bathroom,
right,
to cleanse ourselves, and to, if we have a diarrhea, oh well, God, we're in and out of the bathroom,
or
you know,
to go to the bathroom at all, to be able to urinate or defecate,
yeah,
in privacy. I mean, it's part of human dignity to me.
Part of human dignity,
right.
And for, I'm just saying, as a doctor, urinary tract infections are fairly common in women. Well,
right,
they're in and out of the bathroom, and how I was just thinking, well, what about a urinary tract infection in a woman who's homeless? Oh my God. The horribleness and disrespectfulness of that,
mm-hmm, pain and suffering of a urinary tract infection,
yeah, and then having to search for a bathroom,
yeah,
and then when I think about
public bathrooms, the issue of public bathrooms being a subject that is... my point here is that I think it's respectful for other human beings, and it's part of our community ness should be to have well managed public bathrooms.
Right. Yeah. It is.
I don't think it's a yes or no. It's of course.
It's to the breaking point with this. I mean, it's going to either happen or we're going to bring down our city council over it, because it's. They are disregarding the health and safety of the people of this community.
Of their other community members.
Yeah, because look at what happened in San Diego. There were 403 people hospitalized and 20 deaths because of a hepatitis A outbreak from the exact conditions that we have in Chico right now, because people have no access to bathrooms during the night. Mm-hmm. And so they're forced to defecate in public. Mm-hmm. And so this
in
hepatitis
in
A...
In Chico, California.
Yeah, in Chico, California. Well, San Diego's the same way.
Yeah.
It's an affluent town, and this is a fecal-oral infection that is very contagious. And they have, they could have prevented it by public bathrooms with hand-washing stations, and they put it off just the way we are in Chico.
So
people can demand this from our city council, so that they get off the pot and do it.
Yeah, off the pot. So public bathrooms, public restrooms, it's not just a human-to-human respect for our other community members. It's a health issue.
It's an emergency.
Yeah. You and I are saying this. We are healthcare professionals. We are saying that.
Yeah, we are. And so I know you're running out of time, and I talked to one other nurse who was somebody who helped set up Safe Space, and she somebody that I've known for years and is a deeply compassionate person. And she... at one point took a person in who had an end-stage disease who was dying, and he arrived at Safe Space with a Foley catheter, which is a catheter that goes into your bladder in order to drain the urine. He had open wounds. He had electrodes still on his chest. He was just dumped.
From the hospital.
He was dumped from the hospital onto Safe Space without even a phone call, and she ended up taking him home with her, and he died because he was dying. Uh-huh. So it is shocking to me the level of acuity that I have seen in Safe Space this last winter. We have people who are what you would see in nursing homes, people who cannot self-care, who could not find their way to the bathroom, who cannot clean themselves, who cannot stay, they are incontinent, they cannot stay dry, they cannot ambulate, they are wheelchair bound, people in walkers, people with spastic conditions different types of spastic paralysis in walkers and things like that, that are just... it's so inhumane to see the kind of people that society has turned out. You know, I mean, something happened. Maybe their mom died, or a lot of times it's the death of a caregiver or somebody who was the person who was paying the rent.
They were relying on.
And then they relied on this person, and that person went away, and they found themselves homeless. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to survive out there where there are, you know, a small fraction of the homeless probably are predators. They're the ones who steal the meds or steal the cell phones or, you know, so they're at risk every single night. They are never safe. And yet I've seen such compassion, too, among the homeless.
Yeah.
There are so many of the homeless will help one another.
Sure.
And they'll take that person to the bathroom. And, you know, I mean, there are a lot of love there. But just to think about what it's like for people.
You know, and just real quick... I don't know if we had our community hospital, the hospital in Chico had a home where people after discharge with medical conditions, as you just spoke to, who needed some element of medical care rather than being put out onto the street, who didn't qualify for a convalescent hospital or there wasn't a convalescent hospital available. It'd sure be nice if our community hospital had a home that was kind of a halfway house for those with medical need after they leave the hospital.
Yes.
I think that thought is actually in the works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I see that. I see there's a good transition there for
I hope that Yeah. I hope that occurs.
I hope so, too. And I just want to give a couple of stats here, is that it's kind of interesting that, you know, a lot of times people want to say, oh, you know, they come to Chico for the services, but there are 91,600... I'm doing that wrong. Anyway, there are a lot of homeless people, 91,000 over that, and half of them are in California. The life expectancy of a homeless person is 42 to 52 years. Mm-hmm. And one of the things in this article I read said, 50 is the new 75. And that is really true.
If you're without a home.
If you're without a home. It is so hard on you to be out in the elements, to have this kind of stresses that you have of always watching your back and being run out of different places and never knowing what, you know, where you can go to get a meal or to, you know, to be safe.
If that isn't a public health issue, I don't know what is.
Yeah, it's totally crazy. And then, so this nurse I was speaking to, she kind of has a big overview of who the homeless are. She talked about people who are mentally ill. She talked about people who are orphans, who are post foster care, who maybe have attachment disorders and have never learned to trust anyone, and they're out there after they're cut loose of foster care. There's nothing for them.
The
there's people with alcoholism and drug addiction and cognitive problems like head injuries, learning disabled people, and these people who have head injuries have more accidents, more problems with impulse control, you know, so they tend to have more and more problems. I mean, these problems just stack up for some people. So it was really interesting to talk to her, but then we started talking about within the treatment, you know, within the safe space community, how we always got sick every year. And it's because a lot of our clients are so run down. They get these bronchitises. Mm-hmm. Many end up with pneumonia. Mm-hmm. Many with cuts or bruises or whatever end up with septicemias or septic conditions that land them in the ICU. They require multiple ICU visits, multiple days in the hospital. All a taxpayer expense, because they don't have housing. That all of these expenses could be cut way, way back if they only had housing.
If I did not have a home and was on the street, I would be ill more than I am currently, as would anybody.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Totally makes sense.
Yeah, we talked about
health consequences.
MRSA, which is a staph superbug that's very hard to treat with antibiotics.
Yeah, yeah.
We talked about a resurgence in tuberculosis, which occurs when people are in a space together. And these superbugs that when you have incomplete treatment with antibiotics, about these bronchitises that land so many in the hospital over the course of the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've seen this, you know, I think at Safe Space our biggest over-the-counter medication that we give out is for coughs and, you know, because so many people, they just are coughing, coughing. They work so hard. So, I mean, those are the main things that I wanted to mention that that I've been a part of, that others have seen. And there's just this, there's, you know, the discrimination against the homeless in itself is probably the major problem, because we lack political will to do something about it. You know, I'm a peace activist, and I believe most strongly that if we cut the military budget by a very small amount, that we could house everyone in America and provide them the services that they need in order for them to be safe and healthy. But
could you say that? Could you say that one more time?
The military budget, which increased markedly in this last go-round, if that could be cut, we could provide the services.
Cut small amount.
Yeah, even a small amount, we would still have plenty for defense. But the military this time around got more money than they even asked for.
Mm-hmm.
And they are so bloated and so top-heavy. We have empire. We have 800 military bases around the world. Mm-hmm. It is like the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
We are so top-heavy, and we also are always seeking wars. And so If we could dial that back, we could provide housing.
And redirect that money to her housing.
Redirect to civilian needs. And this is the time right now, too, just to mention that the Poor People's Campaign, if people would look that up, I'd really appreciate it, because this is what Dr. King was doing in 1968 when he was killed. And it's been taken up again by the Reverend William Barber. And this is a week that they've had their kickoff. And cities all over the country are looking at ways to, you know, to redirect money so that we can get rid of poverty. This is in the richest country in the world. The income disparities, you know, where so many people are lacking, is just getting worse and worse.
And the Poor People's Campaign
is. And the Poor People's Campaign is a way that we can start to organize and take back our country and to care for all of our people, you know, and
a listener could look that up on the internet. That would pop up and see what's happening.
Yeah,
currently,
there's lots of there's lots of articles about it, because it's a kickoff this week. Mm-hmm. And we on Monday at Beale Air Force Base, we're going to be demonstrating about the Poor People's Campaign, and we just hope people will.
Have
join
you ever
us.
Demonstrated at Beale Air Force Base before?
He winked at me. I wonder what that means. Yes.
I think you probably have your own,
I have a shrine there. I have a shrine.
I hope you have a little place to stay over there.
My tenth spot.
I have so much respect for you.
Yeah. We have a lot of we have a lot of dead activists that we have little rocks for out there.
Oh, wow.
But there is, you know, I'm sort of running out of words here, but Ken, do you have anything you wanted to say as I wind down and start babbling?
Well, just one comment, you know, regarding bathrooms and the city council, you know, the city council could do something. They could, but they need the information and the will. And I sit here wondering, where is Butte County Public Health in these matters? I mean, what you're talking about is clearly a public health issue, and it's like our public health department is just lost in the ether somewhere.
Yeah, I hear you. Just so you know, I actually brought this subject up with the Butte County Health Officer a couple days ago. Public bathrooms.
What'd he say?
Well, I'm wondering if I can. Well, let me put it to you this way. He's a family physician. I'm a family physician. I will tell you that we were trained and we think similarly on many issues. Mm-hmm. You can read between the lines on this if you like, I am totally in favor of, and I think it's our responsibility as community members and as the Board of Supervisors and City Council to supply and to maintain in a good standard public restrooms. So if that tells you, if that gives you any information where our Butte County Public Health Officer sits, then maybe you heard it from me.
And let me just
my point is, I don't know how a doable they're not an elected organization. They are employees, so I don't know how that could work out.
Well, that is one of the
I think our Board of Supervisors need to make that happen.
Yes, they need to make it happen. And, you know, there is a disparity. I was a department head for many years. I can tell you there is a huge disparity between the elected officials, which happen to be the sheriff, the DA, all of the judges appoint, the chief probation officer, and, as you put it, the hired help. And it is a problem. We have seen more and more money taken out of behavioral health and moved over to these, to those kinds of organizations. It's not right.
Well, I should like to see new Board of Supervisors. By the way, thank you Chris Nelson, thank you so much for being here with us, registered nurse and women's health nurse practitioner. Thanks so much for sharing with us today.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And Ken Fleming, behavioral health specialist and past grand jury chairman, thank you so much for your input and words today.
Can I make Chris, one quick announcement?
Yes, please.
On a totally different subject, urging people to go to the Kinder Morgan Tank Farm tomorrow at noon on Midway and Hagen Lane for a demonstration against the Trans Mountain Pipeline, which will bring... Oh, yes. And I also got something from a little bird that said, vote June 5th, but... Anyway, it's very important that we stand in solidarity with those that are trying to stop these pipelines.
And when and where?
Noon, Hagen and Midway.
Tomorrow.
Thank you.
And yeah, vote June 5th. Absolutely. Oh, the Doctor's Inn has been made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Zeppelin Works, specializing in Volkswagen, BMW, Porsche, Audi, Volvo, and Mercedes since 1981. The Zeppelin Works is a full-service repair facility providing technical expertise for any European automotive problem or maintenance. More information can be found by calling 893-0757 or at zeppelinworks.com. And Zeppelin is Zeppelin works.com. And by Baird Roofing Company, serving Butte County for more than 30 years. Baird Roofing specializes in re-roofing residential and commercial structures, along with new roof construction. For a hole in your roof or a whole new roof, stop in at 11025 The Midway or call 342-1631 or visit BairdRoofingCompany.com. Stay tuned for Beetle Nation. See you a month from now for the Doctor's Inn.
To be filled, I don't need no doctor. I don't need no doctor.
I don't need no doctor, Lord, or prescription to be filled.
I don't need no doctor.
I don't
need no doctor.
Only my baby's on.
Because the world is round, it turns me on. Because